goals are good for giving you that initial direction, but that motivation of why you have a goal and you can go, you know, white knuckle it and get to it and lose those 20 pounds. But what happens is you're going to default back to your systems. You're going to default back. And so the real thing in the quote, you know, is like, goals are great for one-time success. Systems are for those that want repeatable and predictable success. Because, and now you need to design a system that the results of it are going to lead to what you want to do.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jake Harris is an author on distressed commercial real estate, bringing 18 years of experience in real estate, construction, and investment management. He's been featured as a national speaker on his expertise. Jake, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, the pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
I started from a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which I think is synonymous with almost everyone else that started in real estate in the last couple of decades. Right. I was getting out of the Army. Somebody handed me that purple and gold book. It was like, yes, this is what I wanted to do. Took me a little while to get there. Part of it was because of a lack of understanding and resources out there. I took a job bartending at a golf course and I got around rich guys, you know, and I hung out and I said, hey, I want to do real estate. I want to do this. How do you do this? You do that. As I asked enough people, somebody said, construction. Get in construction because you can learn real estate from the books. And that's a viable path. But he's like, I've seen the guys that come from the trades have the shortest learning curve and instantly know when and what things should cost, how long they should take. And so he said, I think that is a better foundation of knowledge is the trades, and you can come back to learning it, you know, that process. So commercial construction worked. Our main client was Equity Office Properties, which was Sam Zell's company in the Bay Area buying up office. We were repositioning them. Subsequently, then got into flipping houses in the early 2000s, became a millionaire, hit my goal, subsequent subprime, lost it all. Then started rebuilding it, scaled a nationwide flipping company, single family rental portfolio. We've done 1,200 assets in 23 states, and then dove into, you know, really doing a lot more commercial real estate in the last 7 years, primarily secondary, tertiary markets of high growth markets. So Central Texas, you know, Cincinnati, Milwaukee, a couple other areas, and leads up to today. As doing and managing a portfolio of commercial real estate. And you mentioned author. I wrote a book on this, you know, investing in distressed commercial real estate during the pandemic, during 2020. I thought there was going to be a lot of distress out there. It came out, you know, 2021, and values tripled. So I was wrong. There was not a lot of distress, but I also didn't think the government was going to print $20 trillion and then throw it out the window to everybody. But you know, the fundamentals of the book are still true, whether it's distressed or non-distressed, or just you're looking to invest into commercial real estate, especially those people that are looking to bridge from the residential side into the commercial. So I think that was longer than 90 seconds, though. It might have been like 110 seconds.
It's okay. You gave us a lot of things there that I really want to, you know, chat about. There were a lot of pivot points for you. It sounds like, okay, I'm doing this. And you might have even been very successful at them. And then you said, but wait, I see opportunity over here. Talk to us about those moments.
So I'm going to tell you, I was sitting on a street corner down in Tucson, and I was crying and I was praying to be worth no money. I was like, dear Lord, can I have no money? That'd be awesome to be worth nothing, zero, worthless, nothing. And so to make that even the matter worse is, you know, I told you I had some construction background. I was doing a remodel on this Adobe house, and it was for the boyfriend of the girl I thought I was going to marry. We'd recently split up. Totally my fault. I was in a very tough and miserable place. You know, it was during the subprime meltdown. Houses were, you know, falling. Values were falling. I was not, you know, there. But so she's dating this new guy. She felt bad for me and said, hey, you should hire Jake to fix up this house. And so every time I'm at this house and he comes over and there, because he doesn't know the previous relationship that we had together, And it's like taking your heart and just smashing it on the ground because I'm so hard up for money because I owe on these other houses and I owe more money than they're worth. And I've been coming to closing table and buying out of mortgages, bringing 20 grand, then 50 grand, then 70 grand. And then ultimately I've run out of money, but I still have these assets. And I'm sitting there and I'm heartbroken. I'm crushed. I'm looking at this distress of all of these and losing it. I have friends, family, people that invested money with me on some of these. And I'm sitting there and I'm crying and I just want to be worth nothing.
Why nothing?
Because at least I don't owe these hundreds of thousands of dollars. Can I just start over and can be worth nothing? And so that's where, and really the revelation was I had defaulted to a goal. I wanted to be a millionaire before 30 and I achieved it. I became successful. I became, you know, a millionaire before 30. I was 28 years old. I was sitting there like, yay, but I had no systems in place. And so from those pivots, and even though that it was in the rock bottom and I was bouncing along there, and you know, subsequently another book came about, Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek. I happened to be reading that. I actually started going. I walked to the bookstore and read that book. I didn't buy it. I put it way back on the bookshelf. I walk back the next day and come to it. And so what it was is like, I am going to do real estate for the rest of my life. So what did I do right? What did I do wrong? And now how do I double down or triple down on the strengths that I already have? And so the reality was, is like, I don't have to know everything. I don't have to do it everything myself. Putting together a system and also a team that can fill in those gaps. And so instead of me trying to be the best individual, well-rounded, average investor in every single aspect, I can do the things that I do really well and then build out the team for those other areas. And so that's when you say the pivot. And I go, well, the pivot was the realization. And my dad gave me this advice. He said, you're too smart for your own good. You didn't put in the work. You didn't do the homework. You didn't put in the systems in place. And so for me, is there's actually a quote on the back of the book from Baron Rothschild. You know, it says, the best time to buy is when there's blood in the streets, even if the blood is your own. And so that was the thing, was the pivot is the blood is in the street. It's time to pivot. It's time to build upon this. And so it was through my trial and error of starting to build systems, starting to build. And, you know, and I'm not saying that magically I knew right away. It was a process. And this has been many, many years of process of building systems into place to allow to then create and make mistakes and then leverage and grow and expand. And so that's been the, one of those kind of pivots was that failure. And I invest a lot in San Antonio. I don't know if you're familiar. Remember the Alamo?
Yeah.
I was out in front of the Alamo. My business partner at the time, he was like, dude, you know, they all died, right? Like, why do you keep going in front of the Alamo? And I was like, yeah, but you have to understand the symbolism of it is everyone died. And I translate this back to my life of like, I had this ultimate failure where I got wiped out. I was worth a millionaire, you know, kind of thing, to wishing I was worth $0. Metaphorically, I died, but ultimately you won the war. The Texas came and won the war. They used that failure as the rallying point. Remember that failure? Now let's go win the war. And so to me was exactly that. Let's play the long game. Let's start doing these things. Instead of the short-term success of this in 6 months or a year or this one deal, now let's look about this for the long term.
When you say systems, I mean, it's a great buzzword, but it practically, it can be very nitty-gritty. Process mapping, whatever that looks like, building systems. How have you done that? You know, going from a broke contractor to doing nationwide flipping. That's a big transition.
Yeah. So, I mean, part of that you also have to understand is there's a lot of books, a lot of journey. I went back to school. I went and got a master's degree in international real estate and finance. Really was learning the language of portfolio management, how and sitting down with institutional investors. How do you manage a portfolio? How do you balance these things out? And so, you know, I was flipping houses. We were doing stuff. We were buying houses and then we sold them off to Invitation Homes in bulks, you know, sales. And I was really good at being the contractor and I was micro correct. So I could save you, you know, 10 cents a linear foot on baseboard you know, 25 cents a square foot on paint. You know, I was good and I was able to squeeze those kind of margins. When they came into the market and were buying hundreds or thousands of houses at a time, and the reason I say this kind of relates to commercial because it's really now taking and moving it up into a portfolio type mentality. And so they were macro correct and they made $8 billion and they're really paying over market value. Today's market value. So if a house is worth $300,000 or an asset or one unit was worth $300,000 during that time period, and they came in and paid $350,000, you and me, if we're existing in that market and we're playing on today's pricing, we're like, that's stupid. Like, what are they doing? They're overpaying. Like, I looked at that and I pulled that back and then figured out some of the things that they were doing. They were playing off the previous peak price. And they said, hey, we'll be willing to pay up to 75% of previous peak price. So we think the previous peak price was $500,000. So we'll pay up to that price because we think it's going to shoulder off that price and go above that $500,000 in, you know, the longer game. So they're playing a 10-year horizon. You and I were playing a game of 6 months or a year. And I go, so they're playing a different game. And so where you go try to outbeat them by playing a different game, it's a losing strategy. So what I did was like started to take and break down like what were they doing? What didn't and how did they systematize this? How did they create, you hear the word the buy box? Like how did they create a criteria for what they were buying? How did they create and due diligence? And so they systematized all of these things. And so for instance, like you know, I was telling you before we started recording, I do a due diligence net lease course. And so due diligence, I have a 72-point checklist that you go down that you look at and go through on every single property. And so I go, why a checklist? Well, the same reason that a pilot uses a checklist, the same reason that a surgeon uses a checklist is because it's super easy to miss some of those little things. The downfall of a surgery or flying a plane is you go kill 300 people crashing into a mountain or somebody, you know, dies in surgery because you didn't check one super little basic thing. I go, I'm not saying that you're going to die or people are going to die because you bought a bad commercial deal. You may feel like it. You may be very miserable and you may be dealing with this for 10, 20 years, the ramifications of buying the bad deal. And so if you can systematize this and go through and check off, and again, it's not for you to know every single one and portions of those steps, but then at least you have a guide to say, did we get the phase one done? Cool. It's got a clear phase one so we can cross off the need for phase two. And that's one of the other things that I think that people coming into commercial real estate don't understand. There's no guardrails. There's no disclosures and mountains of disclosures that you buy in residential. It's buyer beware. And actually, like, people are trying to stick you sometimes because they know the tenant's not going to renew. There's some new factory. There's neighboring property has been contaminating the groundwater. And so if you go and you get a seller financing or a good deal, there's properties that you could give me for $0 that I would not take because it would probably cost you millions of dollars of environmental cleanups and you would never be able to sell it. And if you don't just go off a simple checklist, you'd be like, hey, it's a cheap deal. Look, it's nothing. It's 10 acres for free. You'd be like, well, 10 acres for free. And that's why you go through things like a due diligence checklist. And we do the same thing when we go through an underwriting process for, did we confirm this? Did we check on that? And that's part of that also that due diligence is, do we have a market understanding? Has something changed about this? Was everything was dependent on a freeway off-ramp being added into this area that just never got happened and didn't put in the budget? And so now you're sitting for the next 20 years waiting on nothing, bureaucracy.
A lot of things to think about there. I love the way, you know, that you've put this into a checklist format. I mean, even on just the most basic stuff, due diligence, if you don't have that line by line, you will make a mistake. Talk to us about why you differentiate between building goals or setting goals and building systems.
Goals are great for setting a direction of where you want to go. In my case, it was, I wanted to be a millionaire. But then what happens is I didn't reset that goal. And you see this happen all the time with like people losing weight. I want to lose 20 pounds. They lose 20 pounds and then they put back on 25.
Right.
Oh man, I want to lose 25 pounds. Then they put on 30. And so I go, goals are good for giving you that initial direction, but Atomic Habit, James Clear wrote the fantastic book of clarifying this and really solidified this for me. So those systems is you default the level of your systems. Yep. That motivation of why you have a goal and you can go, you know, white knuckle it and get to it and lose those 20 pounds. But what happens is you're going to default back to your systems. You're going to default back to, and so the real, you know, thing in the quote, you know, is like goals are great for one-time success. Systems are for those that want repeatable and predictable success. Because, and now you need to design a system that the results of it are going to lead to what you want to do. And so you basically reverse engineer. So if you want to lose 20 pounds, your system should be working out every day.
Right.
Only consuming, you know, 2000 calories. And you do that every single day. And now this is now your default system. And it will take some time and then it'll flatten out and you'll be, you know, lose 20 pounds. But like, I think you could just white knuckle, literally just stop eating, drink water, spend a month and hit your 20 pound goal. That's not sustainable.
Right.
And that's how most people set their goals. That's how most people operate. And that's, I mean, obviously doing goals is way better than nothing and just willy-nilly run around Alice in Wonderland. Which way do you want to go? I don't know. Then it doesn't really matter which way you go if you have no objective or trajectory where you're trying to aim to. So get the goals for aiming the direction. The systems are what are very important because you're going to default to those over the long term.
I love that. That goes hand in hand with a book I'm reading now. I think it's called Four Disciplines of Execution. Not sure if you've read it, but he talks a lot about leading and lagging indicators. And that's kind of that system is your leading indicator. It's like they talk about that. Talks about weight loss. He said, you know, getting on the scale is the lagging indicator, right?
Sure.
It's a lagging indicator of the exercise and eating correctly, which is your leading indicator. Eat correctly. Exercise, the scale, the results will follow. Same thing for you. You're saying, hey, set your goals, set the direction. Okay, we want to lose weight, but then your leading indicators are build the system behind it such that the then goals get fulfilled.
And I think one of the other big disillusionment of people in general is they think that they don't want to suffer. And so I think obstacle is the way, or suffering is always going to happen. Whether you suffer from discipline,
right,
the discipline of working out every day and eating appropriately, or you suffer from the consequences of being overweight and, you know, falling apart and having poor health. You're going to suffer from having to go through the due diligence checklist, and it's more problematic to go through. And you'd be like, I just want to go do deals. I don't know so many people that are like, oh, I'm blasting out LOIs, I'm ready to jump in. And then they close on deals hoping that it works out on the end. And I go, the repercussions is, so you didn't do your homework up front. And gee, I sure hope you thread that needle and you hit that, you know, everything perfectly, all your projections, all your expenses, everything else, and it just works out for you. The downside, the risk profile is it goes wrong and everything you've built up to in your life is wiped out. Mailbox money is great, but not at the risk of losing your own mailbox, having you and your kids out on the street.
Right. Don't lose your mailbox. There's your title of the show. Don't lose your mailbox. I've never heard that. It's a good point, a very valid point. I love that. Tell me right now, you guys, we'll talk one last point here on pivot. You know, you guys have gone from nationwide flipping to doing a lot more commercial real estate in the last 7 years. What's a fun project you're working on right now?
A few fun projects. One that we're finishing up, a CLT project, cross-laminated timber, a multifamily mixed-use development in East Austin. You know, it's kind of thinking of like giant pieces of plywood, but with dimensional lumber. It was manufactured in Austria that we shipped over, and it's big, you know, things get craned up. Getting ready to break ground, and really this is what I'm most excited about right now, is a boutique hotel on the Riverwalk in San Antonio. So a ground up project. I'm leaning a lot more into hospitality because, you know, in today's world, I mean, cap rates are compressed even more, you know, multifamily industrial darlings. I like going where other people are not, because really, you know, I just have a hard time taking lower profit margins and higher risk. And so I would rather, you know, be able to buy something under its intrinsic value. That's why I think distress, you know, was where I initially made my bones, is because people were scared of it.
Right.
And you can actually have more margin of safety in things that people don't want because you can structure the deal more appropriate to you and also have better upside. And really, everything is about protecting your downside. Don't lose money. You know, and then, you know, rule number one from Warren Buffett is don't lose money. Rule number two is see rule number one. And so I go, so again, the game it is don't lose money, not go try to hit home runs, don't lose money. And if you retool that, then it's not go buy three cap multifamily. In my opinion, I don't have the systems in place that can, you know, make money on that. If you have a 0.2% interest rate line of credit from Deutsche Bank for $500 million, which I know some of these institutional investors do,
right?
Man, if you're borrowing at 0.2%, you can go make money at 3%. I can't borrow money at that. So I was like, I would lose or be, you know, gambling that the caps continue to compress. So, and that's why it's like playing your own game, sticking in your lane, doing the things that you know how to do. And then what's really exciting about that, and I think hospitality right now is a lane in which I see opportunity over the next coming years, because you can buy them at 8, 10, 12 cap on existing, you know, cash flow. And I think there's some demographic and societal things that are changing that are going to make them more valuable coming into the next 5-10 years.
Love it. Jake, thank you for your time today. It's been a blast learning about you and your business and just your story. Thanks for sharing that with us. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
I would say through the website, catchknives.com, you can sign up for our mailing list. We push out, you know, we have a YouTube channel. We have actually our own podcast that actually I think releases next month, A Contrarian Investing Approach. Personally, you can find me on Instagram is where I'm most active, and that's at jake.realestate. And, you know, again, through that catchknives.com, you can sign up. We have, you know, all of our things that are pushing out through there so that we can help, you know, share those messages to people.
Awesome. Jake, thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Sam, appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.